This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Adam Scalina. And today is almost a wrap-up, right?
I think it's
December 9th. What a season on the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I can't believe it.
Another great year. So this is going to come out next week, which will be our last one of the season coming out here. We'll be back in the early new year. And we've got tons of guests lined up already. Very exciting guests already in for January. But today I thought, you know what? We're going to go through our predictions. We gave people a previous episode, kind of the four, I don't want to say tricks, but four good points to have a strategy of how you can like double your cash position in commercial real estate.
Yeah.
We had Rod on previously talking about the top five markets that we like for next year.
Yep.
But I thought today, let's unpack what's going to happen in 2020. What are our predictions? Let's go through the asset classes. Let's go through and sort of give our insight on what we think is going to happen in 2025. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial, John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
I actually can't believe, I just had to look back, Corey, while you were talking. We started this show in May of 2021.
2021?
Do you believe that?
No. Wow.
It seems like...
time is... You haven't aged at all.
Yeah.
I have. You haven't.
Yeah, exactly. We've got 2 feet in the grave here. I've definitely aged. Okay, May 2021, which is unbelievable. So we've done the recap a few times. We should be better at this than we probably will be.
Yeah, every year we get a little bit better. We read a few more other people's articles before we share our insights every year.
Let's do this. I've created the questions because I play the layperson on the show, and I'm basically going to be quizzing you, but let's go asset class by asset class.
Let's do it.
Then I've got a couple questions about interest rate and then geographically where you're betting on each asset class. So let's start, first of all, predictions for industrial space next year.
So I think we're leading off with what we feel could be your best bet. So last year we thought retail was having a comeback. And one thing I think is really important to know when you're buying these assets, everyone wants to buy low, sell high. That's your traditional stock method, applies in commercial real estate. When people look at appraisal reports, they look at historical data. When bankers look at historical data, it's just that it's historical information. So we're looking forward to what we think is next. And if you look at the retail numbers going back to 2023 and obviously 2022, they weren't very good. Lending was probably hard to get. A lot of bankers weren't very bullish on it, but us on the front lines could feel the excitement happening in the asset class. So that's where we're going with. And when we look back at 2024, I would give us a big, big, big check mark. Retail's back. Retail came back. If you got in early 2024, 2023, you did very well last year. I think it's going to continue to stay strong. Kind of feel the same about industrial. I think industrial this year could be your leader with regards to a rebound. And why that is, big, big, big component on why. If you look back in 2023 and 2024, industrial, especially when you look at the smaller bay, so call it sub 3,000 square feet, grade level loading door, small business owner has the largest percentage of owner occupiers versus investors. Versus you go like down to the retail asset class, for argument's sake, maybe you've got 20% owner occupiers, but 80% investors. When you go to the small bay industrial, you might have 70% owner occupiers, 75% owner occupiers. The investor pool is very small for that one. So that's been a very tough product to move. Thus, developers have not been bringing projects to market, arguably over the past 24 months. Yes, there still is projects coming, but not nearly as much. And when you go back and you look at the 10-year ride we've been on in industrial, the vacancy rate feels like it's gotten tighter year after year after year as we've been delivering more and more product. So you can draw the conclusion that's ongoing demand. It's not pent-up demand that all of a sudden got fulfilled and then died.
Right.
So we're coming out of 2024 and 2025. We got interest rates coming down. We have higher vacancy rates in that asset class than we've had before. And I think we discussed this on a couple episodes ago. Some reports like, oh, they've quadrupled. Oh, so they've gone from 1 to 4. Yeah. Like they're still astronomically low versus most stuff.
Right.
So we now have interest rates coming down. We're going to probably get both the tenants and the buyers to come back to the table now that their leverage points are changing. Yet we haven't really had much supply get delivered into the system over the past 2 years or even start over the past 2 years, which is going to create a supply gap issue, maybe at the end of 2025, early 2026, probably for like a 12 or 16 or 24 month run, because there's not enough stuff coming in to fulfill the ongoing demand. So thus, the existing inventory will probably get absorbed at a much faster rate. The vacancy rate of the asset class will probably come down, and that's going to force pricing both on resales and leases probably to go up in 2025, maybe into 2026, because we're probably going to have that gap of product not getting delivered that's going to be needed for that industry to kind of continue on the path that it is. So if we get our vacancy back to like sub 2%, let's say, and now interest rates are coming down, people's leverage completely changes. Now you're going to get these people coming back to the table to buy. You're going to get more and more tenants looking to get back into the market. Everything's going to fall in line. On top of that, it's a very safe bet. It's not kind of like a home run or bust bet. You're going to do very, very well in it. And if we predict that we do have a little bit of a supply issue over the next, call it 24 months, you might come out ahead much further than you think. And I think when you also look at the vacancy right now, the one thing to take into consideration is we're here 2024. Well, 3 years later, what was happening in 2021 at this time? The world was shutting down. It was COVID.
Right.
Supply chain issues. So companies are ramping up warehouses to either park PPE, it felt like, or when they get supply, they're ordering so much of it because they don't know when the next shipment's coming. They need larger warehouses to house this stuff. Well, a lot of those three-year leases have all come to expiry, and maybe they're not getting filled at the same rates they are before. And people are looking at it like, well, that was $22 a foot. Now it's $19. The market's softening. Well, you take that $19 and you go back to 2016, it might have been $9. So we're still well ahead of where we were, that now I think you're going to find is going to continue to tighten over the next year, maybe 2 years. And industrial, I think, will be a leader this year in the rebound, more so than office and even more so than retail for that matter.
So you're basically saying that COVID created an unrealistic expectation on industrial.
Not so much an unreal expectation. I think it added additional pressure that it already couldn't take. So right. When you had lease rates that were like $9, $10, $11, $12 that now we're going for like $16 to $18, that's like a 25 to 40% jump on your rents.
Sure.
A percentage is a lot. And then you throw on all this additional pressure on top of that, you almost get like a housing market issue.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's kind of like, hey, we have record-setting immigration. We have all this stuff coming, but we can't deliver any houses. So it's going to add further pressure to an already problem. That's why I think COVID really, really put on industrial, because people are thinking like, oh, the retail market's dead. Everyone's going to go online. Well, you don't rent retail space to sell online products. You rent warehouses to sell online products.
Right.
So now there was a shift like in maybe like how the business world was going to look at certain things. Maybe a large retailer may need half the space because their online business is going to do so much better. Now that we're in 2024, almost 2025, and you look at the Aritzis of the world and the Lululemons of the world, they've all just gotten bigger on the retail footprint. They obviously have a vertical retail model that allows them to do that, but retail went nowhere. If anything, it's kind of gotten probably stronger now because you're getting more and more tenants coming back into it. You're almost probably seeing close to, if not higher prices in some markets. And where it really benefited the retail is going out to the Langleys and the Colonnas and all of these secondary and tertiary markets saw a huge run up in retail over the past couple of years because there's so much more demand because there's so many more people there.
Right.
I think industrial will be the leader this year.
But yeah, and I think what I meant by your point about if you're looking at it from the perspective of lease rates are down since COVID,
yeah,
actually take COVID out and just look at lease rates, how they've performed in the past.
It's been incredible.
10, 15 years, right?
Yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so industrial, we're putting some check marks.
Yeah, we're thinking industrials, it's going to be the safety net you're looking for, but also I think has a far above average chance of actually being a really, really good investment over the next 24 to 36 months.
Okay, so here's something that everybody's been talking about over the last, since COVID, but shrinking their office space down. A lot of people obviously working from home, got hybrid models. We're now actually doing it with our office space. It seems like it's inevitable that not a lot of people are taking on more office space, except William Wright and Elon Musk probably.
Yeah, well, we're getting better deals. That's why we're doing it.
let's talk office. So how does office perform as an asset?
Well, I don't think it can get any worse. And by that, I mean, obviously, if you look before the pandemic, we had, depending on what report you read, probably like a sub 3% vacancy rate, which is very unhealthy. As a landlord, you can put up a number and there's going to be multiple tenants that are willing to pay it. So it's very unhealthy from a tenant standpoint. So automatically, you're going to get lots of developers that are going to say, hey, what is the highest and best use of this land? Oh my gosh, look at the $55 office lease rates. Let's build an office building. So you're going to get a whole bunch of that come into the pipeline pre-pandemic that all of a sudden gets delivered during the pandemic or after the pandemic, which is not really needed just yet. And I think you also look at the hybrid models of the world or the work from home models. Now that we're a few years past, I could have been outspoken at the time. And I think on this program, I said it quite often that we're all creatures of habits. The office market is going to be okay. I want to say it's going to be okay. Looking forward 5 or 10 years, it's going to be okay. I'm not saying go buy an office building now because your cost to sit on that office building might outweigh any gains you're going to have. Right. But it's all going to kind of come back where people, we're creatures of habit. We're going to go back. The faces or the tenancies might change, but the office market, I think, will eventually fill itself back up. We're not a head office city to speak of. We're very unique downtown Vancouver because, for argument's sake, maybe it's 30% office to 70% hotels and residential versus you go down to Seattle and you might have 70% office versus 30% for residential housing and stuff like that. So up here, naturally, we're not a head office city. We're squeezed because so many condo towers take up a lot of the spaces in the downtown core. And on the outskirts, that I think the office market is going to kind of come back together. On top of that, I think the jobs market has changed dramatically, where during COVID and coming out of COVID, a lot of employers weren't in a position they could say like, hey, I want everyone back to the office, because people that didn't want to come back, they'd say, fire me. I'll get a job next door because they'll hire me to work from home. And now I think that labor market is shifting, that employers now be maybe more in the driver's seat than they've been in the past couple of years, might start mandating either a hybrid model that didn't previously exist, or I want everyone back in the office. We're going to get out of the hybrid model and get back to the office. Now, I'm not saying this is going to happen overnight. I'm not saying the problem will be solved in 2025, but I think it's going to get better. You also have some projects, the office buildings that were in the pipeline that never came to fruition, that have either been stalled or shelved altogether. So that's going to allow probably the existing inventory to slowly get picked at to absorb at a much faster pace than we've seen as of late. Landlords have offered more inducements to get deals done, so it's been more lucrative on the tenant side. But then also on top of that too, you have great markets like Surrey and even Langley on the 200th exit. These markets that are very, very, very tight for office space, that now that you got more and more people out in those areas, that the office demand is far higher. And I won't say my numbers, but I can tell you this. We pay more for office space on a price per foot basis in POCO, which are Tri-Cities office, and Langley, which is our Fraser Valley office, than we do for our downtown Robson Street, Vancouver office. Higher price per foot.
Which
you wouldn't
very,
think.
Very close to Robson and...
Robson and Seymour.
Seymour.
Yeah, right. Pretty much if we were in our office space all weekend between the hours of 4 p.m. and 10 p.m., we probably could have taken in the Taylor Swift show and listened to it.
And it should be noted, so Vancouver boasts one of the lowest downtown office vacancy rates in North America. I think I've just pulled it up right now. So 7.1%. In contrast, just a few other cities to speak of when you think about downtown vacancies. Ottawa is 11.5%. Toronto, 11.8%. Manhattan, 15.2%. San Francisco, 24.2%. And Dallas is 32.2%. So Vancouver is actually, in many ways,
We bucked the trend.
Yeah, we've bucked the trend a lot, right?
Yeah.
And when you think about it that way, but see, and it's curious that you say that. So is downtown, because I mean, here's something that we've talked on the residential show a ton about, but I don't know what it's going to, everyone's looking at downtown Vancouver as a deal in residential right now. Like it's actually mind boggling. Like when you look at the rest of the region, and there's some arguments why that might be the case. Well, it used to be that if you wanted, you know, a sophisticated dining experience or great coffee shops or whatever, you had to be downtown. And that's just no longer the case in the region.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I mean, we're hearing about random stabbings now on a weekly basis. There's people fearing when they're downtown. People that you wouldn't expect that used to live downtown are saying, I don't feel safe downtown now.
It's funny you say that, because I remember long before we had kids, we lived in Yaletown.
Yeah.
And we used to walk up to Granville Street because there was a place called the Fish Shack. And we'd go for oysters, and you have a couple glasses of wine.
Yeah.
And I would never think twice about walking down Granville Street, down Richards, Helmkin, back into Yaletown at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock on a Friday night after a dinner. I would never think twice. I won't even go on Granville Street now to get Subway for lunch from my office. It just doesn't have the same appeal.
Well, Granville, for sure.
It just doesn't have the same, I don't want to say, it doesn't feel as safe. Before, it felt very safe walking the streets. And it just didn't have that same feeling now that it once did. And I was in San Diego last year, and I remember we were walking to the baseball game on a weekend. It felt almost like old Vancouver. And I had my oldest guy with me, who at the time was like 7 years old, and we're walking to the baseball game to see the Padres play, and it felt safe, and there was tons of people everywhere. It almost had like a vibe to it. And it reminded me a lot of what Vancouver felt like pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't feel the same. So I can, you know, what you say about that is also very probably vindicative of the office market right now.
Right.
And that's why you're finding lease rates might be a little bit more cheaper in the downtown core than you've seen them. At times when you go out to some of these suburban markets like a Langley or even a Surrey Central, you might be paying more on a price per foot basis right now to get office space in those markets. A, there's less product, but B, now there's more demand than what there would have been in the downtown market, especially when you had a lot of product that got delivered that never got absorbed. That's probably still empty to this day.
But parking's still gone up somehow.
Parking is more than the office spaces in some cases,
exactly.
I'm sure. So it's coming back. Don't know if 2025 is the year, but let's have this conversation in 2030 and we can say, hey, told you so.
We'll be almost 10 years into this show by then. Okay, multifamily. So this is a big question mark. We've talked a ton about multifamily on this show. Challenging time to be a developer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of risk in multifamily right now.
I think,
however, needed.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, you mean, you hear a lot of people talk about like beds and sheds.
Yeah.
And beds and shed strategy is like beds is multifamily, sheds is industrial. And I think that kind of rings still supreme heading into 2025, where you still have a very, very low vacancy rate in the multifamily thing. It's really expensive to build product. Nowadays, with land costs and construction costs, the amount of money paid to cities and fees and all that stuff is not coming down. It's going up, which is going to put further pressure on that development world. But the biggest problem they have is just the rent regulations they have here in this province.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that they're not needed, but I'm saying you're not going to get enough supply to offset it until they get changed or lifted. Because if private sector money, if they look at it like, hey, wait a minute, I'm going to build this building here for $50 million. And then you're going to determine and tell me what I can rent that place for. And my expenses are probably going to rise at a tick of like 8 to 12% per annum, I'm guessing. And then on top of that, my vacancy rate is probably sub 1%. And if I can't turn over a bunch of units in 1 year to try to get new market rates, my income is going to go up by maybe 3%, depending on what the NDP says next year. So my expenses are going up 8 to 12, but my sales are going up 3. And if you can't turn them over, it's going to be very, very challenging to try to catch back up. That's always been the saving part. Like, hey, 10% of my building moved out. I could get rid of those $800 one beds and get like $1,150 for them now. So I'm at least trying to keep up with things.
Yeah.
Also in that asset class, when you're looking at older buildings, like wood frame walk-ups, is you don't really have the ability to go back to really do a lot of capital improvements. Yes, you can apply to get some relief on it, to charge some of it back, but you can't really get a lot of it back. Where at what point in time do a lot of these old wood frame walk-up buildings in the West just become uninhabitable because they're just too expensive to maintain? And I've got a lot of legacy leases in here that I just can't keep up. So I think it's a very safe strategy if you do buy a multifamily because the vacancy rate is so low. the challenge is it's a government regulated. And that's where I think you talk to a lot of people in their investment strategy. If their investment strategy involves the word hope or the word government in some capacity, it sometimes might get articulated to go somewhere else.
Makes a lot of sense. Let's talk land.
Development land. So I can say on the forefront from the brokerage standpoint, there has been a lot of development land sales have happened this past quarter, far more than the public probably thinks. And yes, it is market dependent of where these transactions are happening, but developers now are coming back to the table. They're buying land. They're obviously bullish on the markets they're buying land in, that this is probably land that'll be delivered 2, 3, or 4 years down the road to end users. But they're bullish in those markets and land deals are happening again. And that's a really good sign because for the past 2 years, it'd be very hard to say that because obviously the price to acquire land has been very expensive, but the cost of capital has been even more expensive that you can't sit on the land. Because when you buy development land, it has minimal, in some cases, no income on it whatsoever. So you have to be able to service that debt. So not only is my down payment requirement going to be extremely high to service the debt, but on top of that, or to extremely high just to buy the land, but now I got to service that land year over year with property taxes and all of this stuff that's going into it, it can become a very expensive proposition. And that's why there's probably been more court-ordered sales in the past year than I think I can ever remember in the past decade that's taken place, because there's a lot of land developers have been sitting on land and probably paying prime plus 2, prime plus 3 floating. That is going to continue to get more expensive. And some of them have had the land either put up for sale without their consent, or other of them said, hey, cut off the arm to save the body mentality. This parcel here isn't the most valuable one to us. We have to sell it, maybe at a loss just to get it there so we can maintain the capital to keep our prized possessions. That could also happen. If you look in Toronto, I think there's always a funny slogan that was like, if you go online, it's like survive till 25 was always a running joke through 2024 for developers. Like, if you can make it to 2025, you're going to be okay. But if you can't, you're going to be in trouble. So I think land sales are picking up this last quarter. I think they're going to continue to go in the right direction into 2025. But again, capital is still expensive. Like the prime rate is still probably floating around 5, just over 5. What are we at? 3.75 right now plus 2.2. So you're like a 5 prime rate in most banks, or sorry, a 6 prime rate in most banks. So if you're getting prime plus 3 from a B lender, you're still paying 9% on that land.
Interest rates.
Yeah.
So actually this week.
December 11th.
December 11th. So on Wednesday this week, we've got a Bank of Canada meeting. A lot of people are thinking we're going to see 50 basis points.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Seems like that's almost now, I mean, after the employment numbers came in, it seems like that's almost, a lot of people are feeling like there's a consensus now. However, predictions.
I think 25 basis points is guaranteed.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty safe bet at this point. I think you probably have a very optimistic shot at 50 basis points heading into next year. So assuming it is, now you're sitting at like 3.25 of the overnight posted rate. And keep in mind too, like rates don't necessarily fall the same lockstep as the rates that the overnight posted rate has. A lot of the stuff fluctuates on the bond market and the bonds pricing stuff in. So again, it's going the right direction, but don't think because the Bank of Canada drops 50 basis points that BMO the next day is going to be like, hey, guess what? Your approval just fell 50 basis points. Doesn't always work that way. But I think heading into next year, and I think one thing too, the questions that we have in this country is what's going to happen next year from the federal level. And I'll be optimistic. And I think Trudeau is probably on his way out. And I think you're going to have a new potentially conservative government come in. They may relook at some of the Liberals' latest plans with stuff, maybe hopefully capital gains, but the stuff they'll probably may relook at. But then an even bigger question right now that looms over us is our good friend, Mr. Trump, down south and all these tariffs he's proposing or potentially threatening to propose and how that may or may not impact our country. Because obviously things like lumber, which is our biggest exporter down to the States, that's one thing that there's been a very hefty tariff talked about. And if that comes into reality and how that may or may not impact our economy and how quickly that may impact our economy. So I think there's stuff like that happening. I feel like from a market standpoint on commercial, there is a lot of momentum heading into 2025. And I think there's a lot more eager buyers coming back to the table. I think there's sellers that have been maybe sitting on assets that are now going to launch maybe like in the spring market of 2025. So we're going to see inventory levels pick up. So that part is very optimistic. But what happens from the Canadian economy standpoint could have a lot of impact on our 2025 numbers looking back at the end of the year on how much we get impacted from, you said, job numbers and all of that stuff. Like how much it's going to impact those interest rates. I'm going to be very optimistic. I'm going to say 50 basis points December 11th. So we're floating into 2023 at 3.25. And I'm going to go and say, like, we're going to be 2.5 or less December of 2025. I think there's another 75 basis points next year. I'm being, it could be safe. Some people are saying like 2% overnight BOC rate, but I'm going to say 2.5 or less. So if we get 50 this year, 0.75 point drops next year to hit my target or greater.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
Okay. So then your biggest risk facing the commercial real estate market, is it the tariff?
It's going to be the economy. I'm thinking how best to frame it.
Yeah.
It's going to be the economy. And it's not maybe so much the buyers and sellers viewpoint on the economy or the risk, but it's going to be the lender's viewpoint on the economy and the risk.
Interesting.
Because they're the ones that are going to really drive the bus. Because even if it's a great deal, but I can't get lending on it, it's not going to work. So that's where I think it's really, how does the banks look at the economy? How does the bank look at the risk profile? I can say that looking at some buildings that maybe you were getting a, and again, I'm not going to say any one bank, but let's say a Class B industrial asset in Kelowna, maybe in late 2022, early 2023, if you had it fully stabilized at market rents with zero vacancy, you could probably make a pretty good argument with your lender that I want to have a zero vacancy allowance when you're looking to pencil my debt. And then you fast forward kind of to the end of the year, and they may be putting like a 5% or maybe a 7% vacancy in that building that's fully tenanted, stabilized at market rates, but because that's their way, they can hedge their bets on their lending standpoint. Because yes, they're fully occupied today, but if the economy weakens, like maybe you lose one and maybe you're not fully occupied. Maybe you have 20% vacancy in your building now. So I think the banks will look at things like that to probably try to offset some risk heading into next year. It's going to be the economy. It's really going to have the biggest driver of it. It's going to be how do the banks feel about the economy moving forward? And that's going to affect people's lending abilities, regardless to where interest rates get.
Geographically speaking, where you think, so somebody comes to you, they say, I want to go anywhere in the province.
Yeah.
Where are you directing them?
I'm still bullish on like a Nanaimo market. And it's funny because we talked about our top markets of the year. We still feel Nanaimo is probably one of your best investment opportunities. And then a listener wrote me an email, why Nanaimo over Victoria? And I will say that this listener spent some time to construct this email. There was stats, there was a tat. It was really well. I was like, hey, this guy needed a
job.
You
were swayed.
Yeah, this guy was good. He was really good. And all the points he made were 100% on point.
Yeah.
The difference is Victoria has had a lot of great investment opportunities over the past 5 years that a lot of people have taken advantage of. They've bought into that market. Now what you're finding is you're finding lease rates in that market, obviously that are continuing to go up because demand's still there, but the price to acquire the asset is more now than maybe it was before. An example I used previously, I'm going to say 5 years ago, I could be wrong, maybe 6 years ago. I remember there was a client looking at a multifamily building in Victoria, and it was like about 5.5 cap. I remember having a conversation with the agent, like, that's a really good buy. That's a really good buy. Because what people didn't really pay attention to was the vacancy rate in Victoria for multifamily was pretty much the same, if not slightly better than we had on the mainland, which at that time you were seeing cap rates like 3%. So the whole world woke up to that. Starlight, as an example, that bought tons of product in that market. Yeah. And now you're getting cap rates over there like 3.5%. So you're not really getting much of a discount, if any, if you want to look at it from that standpoint, to go buy in Victoria versus maybe on the mainland for that asset class. So that's where Victoria has benefited because there's been a lot of great investment opportunities. A lot of people have bought into that market. I still think it's a great opportunity to buy in there if you can find the right product. I just think you have greater opportunities still in Nanaimo because a lot of people haven't woken up to that just yet. We are finding a lot more tenants want to come into the areas now. You're finding a much higher transition of office tenants and government tenants coming up island. You're getting a much more much larger population growth versus the national average now up there. They're having record-setting building permits year over year over year, which some people might look at and be like, well, you know, is that pent-up demand? Is that ongoing demand? And time will tell. But we're looking at from a commercial asset aspect. Well, if I can buy a great building that's really well-positioned on a major retail node at maybe $250 a foot and the tenants are paying $20 and the neighbors are paying $35, that's an opportunity I'll take all day long. I'm buying at far below replacement cost value. I'm in an area where I've got legacy leases still. So the boom has kind of happened after a lot of these leases have been executed on. So when it comes renewal time, there'll probably be a fairly good lift. But then again, if someone has to leave, my vacancy will probably get filled relatively quickly. So I'm not sitting on it for very, very long. So that's where I just think you might have a greater runway ahead of you in a Nanaimo opportunity than maybe a Victoria opportunity, just because you're paying a little bit more to get that same opportunity in a market that a lot of people discovered 5 or 6 years ago.
So the one consensus seems to be the island's a pretty good pick, though.
Yeah, I think the island's a very safe pick. And also the other thing is, again, I think the BC Interior is a really good pick. Like, I think Kelowna obviously had a tremendous run, but there's still a lot of opportunity in Kelowna. And I think it's, again, it's finding the right asset. Location, location, location is everything in these secondary markets. But I still think Kelowna is a great opportunity. And then you got communities like Vernon, which again, it's very asset specific. Like if someone said, hey, do you want to buy an office building in Vernon? Not so much. If someone's like, hey, do you want to buy like a really good industrial building on 25th Avenue? Tell me more.
Yeah.
So I think you have to understand like the employments in these markets and all of that stuff that goes on. Because I think just like not every deal that you think is going to be good in a market like Vernon or a Kamloops is going to mirror the same deal you just got down here in Langley.
Let's leave it there, Corey. But you going anywhere for Christmas?
I'm taking the family. We're going to do the Home Alone experience. We're going to go get lost in New York for a week and we're going to...
Oh, you're going to leave one kid at home and take off.
That's crossed my mind several times. Several times I've had that thought. But we're going to go do New York for Christmas and go skate on the outdoor ice rink and then go eat pizza and bagels and come back really fat.
Oh, man, good for you.
I've never been to New York before. So I'm excited from a commercial real estate standpoint.
Yeah.
Can't say that too loud because the wife thinks we're going because we're going to look at that. I just want to look at the architecture and go check out and get some ideas. What about yourself? What are you doing for the holidays?
I'm here until the end of the year and then Mexico for 2 weeks. So we'll see. But it's always like the somewhere warm, right?
It's
the big draw. But I have been to New York in the winter and you're in for a treat.
Awesome. I can't wait.
And if anyone wants to get in touch with William Wright over the holidays, over the next while here, or to get your New York your New York feedback or your New Year goal planning, how can people reach out?
People can reach out to us anytime at our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255. They can send me an email, corey@williamwright.ca, or you can visit our website, williamwright.ca, sign up for the latest and greatest news. And it's gonna be a busy 2025.
Yeah.
So you want to enjoy this little bit of downtime, if any, and let's get ready to go.
And they can even challenge you on your picks if they
want. Yeah, absolutely they can.
It's got to be a well-constructed email.
Yeah, I was impressed. Like that guy almost got a job application. That was so well done. I was like, this guy's on point. He's on point on everything.
Excellent. Well, have a great holiday. And we'll see you back in the new year.
We'll see you guys in the new year. Thanks for listening.
Subscribe today.